How does America get its electricity? Writer and photojournalist Molly Seltzer set out to find out in a cross-country project called Electric America, documenting the sources and delivery mechanisms for electrical energy in states across the country. It's funded by a grant from the Shapiro Traveling Fellowship at the George Washington University, and she described it for us earlier this morning.
I actually had been brainstorming this for a while. One of those things that kind of keeps you up at night a little bit. I was thinking about, during my environmental studies past, the systems that underpin our day-to-day activities. And so I wanted to see exactly where the wastewater goes, exactly where the power comes from. And then I started touring some facilities. There is a wastewater treatment plant in Atlantic City, which is not far from my family's beach house in New Jersey. And one of my vacations from work, I basically just decided to take a tour. They have public tours, and I saw the wind turbine that they have on site, the solar they have on site, wastewater treatment, and it kind of came together that I really enjoy learning on the ground, and I would love to keep doing this in some kind of full-time capacity. So I am a photographer and a writer, kind of like a multimedia journalist, if you will, and I take my camera around wherever I go, and my notebook, and my recorder as well. And the three things basically make up my platform and how I communicate with people.
Why energy as a subject?
Energy is so critical to climate change and fighting it, both from a climate mitigation and adaptation standpoint. There's a lot of opportunity for improvement. Electricity and heating across the world account for 1/4 of all global greenhouse gas emissions, which is a huge amount of emissions from one sector. So I figured electricity is something everybody cares about because everybody has an energy bill. And then additionally, it's such a big impact area that electrifying a lot of end uses and connecting people to their power source could potentially be a turning point that really brings the world to a clean energy system.
You know, in projects like this, documentary projects, you frequently find things you didn't expect to find. Has that been the case for you?
Yeah, definitely. For me, I've actually seen a lot on islands, which are really innovative and unique. So even in small communities, I've actually sometimes found the most progressive, creative solutions to energy problems. So, for example, on Kauai, I'm here right now, they have a solar and battery storage facility. Seems pretty simple in concept, put a bunch of batteries together along with some solar power, but the impact that it has is massive. The facility can power up to 4,500 homes for 4 hours, the battery storage facility. And it's pretty much one of those cases where it's just worked out very well. Kauai Island Utility Cooperative and Tesla partnered to make this site. And it's one of the biggest battery facilities in the entire world that's operational. So you think about Kauai, and it's such a small island. Not a lot of domestic resources on the island. And they came up with this pretty progressive scheme that they were able to get operational, and it was wonderful to see on the ground.
It's also, your project sort of makes you think that if you could take the best practices of all 50 states, you might really have something, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. I think one of the key things to realize for utilities, for consumers, anybody who cares about this, is really just to understand what resources you currently have. So what works on one island might not work on another island, but that's why you're your own island, and you figure out what resources are natural and abundant and how you can harness those to make it work for the community. And that's one of the really nice things about having cooperatives or utilities that are really in touch with the local environment and community.
What are some of the other best practices that you've seen around the country, Molly?
Well, I don't know if I would consider this a best practice, but it's pretty amazing. Offshore wind is really an untapped resource in the United States. Right now, there's only one operational offshore wind farm, and that's off the coast of Rhode Island in Block Island. And I visited that in June of this year. It was incredible to see. Only There are five big turbines about 4 miles off the coast of Block Island, and it sends power back to Block Island and then also via an underwater cable to Rhode Island. And, you know, it only takes up a little bit of space in the ocean, created a fair number of jobs, and it's providing clean power. And it's more than Block Island needs, so a lot does go to Rhode Island. And if you think about the breadth of the ocean and the coastline in the U.S., there's just so much potential capacity to use. So I think for me, offshore wind is such an exciting field and an area of innovation that we can move forward with.
In that area of Rhode Island, did you get an idea of what the, you know, the ratio of what the project costs to the returns that it's giving?
Yeah, so the rate structure is pretty interesting, and there's always a lot of stakeholders and players involved. But effectively, a wind developer developed the actual wind farm. So Block Island Power did not actually develop it itself. It was Deepwater Wind. So Deepwater Wind makes an investment and has a contract with a purchasing authority, with a mainland utility. And then Block Island buys the power from them. So there's a lot of different parties, but the wind company has set it up so they have a return on their investment. I think it might be like 8% per year, something like that. But the ratepayers overall on Block Island are supposed to see a decrease in their energy costs. And most importantly, they're no longer tied to the world price of diesel, which is what they were tied to previously.
In Hawaii, we're still pretty well tied to the price of oil because we use quite a bit of oil to produce our energy here, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. But some of the renewables, so Hawaii is about 40% renewable in general across the island. Some have a little bit higher rate, some a little lower rate, but in general around 40%. And as that number increases, the fuel cost will inevitably be affected by, as you wean off oil, your fuel cost changes because you're no longer tied to diesel. So you're able to basically provide a fixed rate if you have a long-term contract with, for example, a solar provider or a wind farm. So that really helps provide some stability in fuel costs, and utilities are integrating them into their costs and figuring out how it works for them and the ratepayer.
So you're seeing that happen in Hawaii?
Yes, definitely. The Kauai Island Utility Cooperative wouldn't have been able to integrate solar and batteries if it wasn't going to be financially beneficial for them in the long term and for the ratepayer. One of the things about cooperatives is that they don't have shareholders. They just serve their ratepayers or their consumers and then their employees. So as long as it's good for the ratepayer in the long term, they seem to be incentivized to invest in these new opportunities.
How many states have you got left to go, Molly?
I have not hit all 50 states. I would love to go across the country entirely, but I've probably been to about 11, and maybe I'll go to 3 or 4 more before the fellowship is up.
Molly Seltzer is founder and chief storyteller of Electric America, as well as a Shapiro Traveling Fellow at the George Washington University. We'll share the links where you can follow her project on The Conversation Facebook page.